landed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Now, I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now, this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
Welcome back into The Hull Show, powered by Chevron. I am Mike Danson, filling in for Brady Hull today. We're going to get to the big story of the day presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. Visit fmsbank.com. And this story is, it's a couple of days old, right? Okay, but I thought this put in a good talking point and some options for people to chime in with what their thoughts are. It's something that hasn't happened since 1991, and it happened on Sunday. And it's a PGA Tour golf story, okay? Amateur golfer Nick Dunlap, he plays golf for the University of Alabama. He was in the field for the PGA Tour event on Thursday through Sunday this last week. He's the first amateur to win a PGA Tour event since 1991. The last golfer to do that was Phil Mickelson. The fun question that goes along with this is, for those of you that don't know, if you're an amateur golfer and you play in a PGA Tour event, you don't get any money. If you win the event, you don't get the prize money because you're an amateur. You have to be claiming that you're a professional golfer to win the prize money for the tournament. So Nick Dunlap, he goes out and he wins this the American Express Championship this last weekend. First prize, Angel, $1.5 million was handed out for winning that tournament. If you're Nick Dunlap, you can go in and before you sign your scorecard and turn it in on Sunday, you can say, I'm changing my status to professional. You can do it that day right there. Boom, $1.5 million, you won the tournament. Here you go. The problem is, if Nick Dunlap decides he wants to turn pro, yes, you win the $1.5 million, but he's earned exemptions into the Masters tournament this year already. He's earned exemptions into the Open Championship. So as an amateur, he's earned those. If he turns pro, those go away. You don't get to use those exemptions. You do for the U.S. Open. He's in the U.S. Open, and whether he would have turned pro or not, he would have been in the U.S. Open. But the Masters and the Open Championship, the British Open, as we like to call it here, but the Open Championship, he would have gave up his exemptions into those tournaments for this year. So, Angel, what are you doing? Are you taking $1.5 million? The other thing he has to give up if he turns pro, obviously, he's just a sophomore at the University of Alabama. He can't go back and play for the University of Alabama if he says, okay, I'm a pro golfer now. So he loses the exemptions and he loses his status and ability to go and golf for the University of Alabama. So you turn pro, here's $1.5 million. You stay amateur, you don't get the $1.5 million, but you get to play in the Masters, you get to play in the Open Championship, you get to continue your college career at the University of Alabama.
Ugh. That's tough. Obviously, me being from Alabama, that would be a cool opportunity. But also me as a very, very amateur golfer, if I had four incredible days of golf and you would give me $1.5 million on a Sunday, I'd probably take it and probably never touch a golf club again.
Well, and I look at it and I go, man, the scary thing about this is like, it's amazing that he won the tournament anyways. Like I say, from 1991 is the last time an amateur won a PGA Tour golf event. But if he may never win another PGA Tour event. Like, that legitimately could happen. Maybe this is the one chance he had to make life-altering type of money with $1.5 million to win it. The odds are probably slim. He's going to get through another year of college. He's going to play in the Masters. He's going to play in all these majors that he gets exemptions for. But he may never win another golf tournament. And that payday may never come again. It may not happen.
No, I think, you know, even in today's world of college athletics, I think he's going to get a nice NIL deal out of this, and he'll probably make some decent money there. Obviously, following the legacy of Justin Thomas, who's also at Alabama, you're kind of in that elite club of golfers in the college level. Would he, if once he's done with college, would he have to go through the Korn Ferry Tour to be eligible for the PGA again?
So because he's won this tournament, there's some stuff that go into it. So he wins that tournament, and that allows him to have his tour card because he won a tournament. Mm. So the thing is he has this year that he can say, okay, I'm turning pro, and he can start playing right away. If he waits until the end of the year, he has to announce before the 25 season would start. Or else he has to play that whole year as an amateur. He can't, in 25, he can't, in the middle of the season, say, I'm going to use it and turn pro now.
Oh, okay.
And then it's the same for 26. So he has to decide before the 25 or 26 season, yeah, I'm just going to go pro, and now I'm a pro golfer. Because he can still play in the tournaments, obviously, but he doesn't get the those exemptions that come along into being a professional golfer. So, yeah, it's just an interesting scenario. I look at it and I go, man, if I'm as confident in my skills as this guy, Nick Dunlap, probably is, man, I don't think I'm going to give up that chance to, like, even to go play the Masters. Like, that exemption into the Masters is as good as gold. Like, to go and play that course, he probably has plenty of opportunities ahead, but it's not given. So, I think I'm going to bet on myself, and I'm going to stay amateur, and I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to take my exemptions into the Masters tournament. I'm going to take my exemption into the Open Championship, and I'm going to play in the U.S. Open, and I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to have fun. But just a very interesting scenario that was placed in front of Nick Dunlap with this win as an amateur. Just absolutely amazing to me that golf is a hard sport. I just can't imagine being as good as these guys are, for one, but to be an amateur, and you mentioned it, Justin Thomas, he's walking down, like, Sunday pairing, he's paired with Justin Thomas, so he's playing with another Alabama guy, and they, you know, he just seemed as calm as could be. A funny story about so Nick Dunlap, he's on the final green, he's on the 18th green, and he's probably got like a 8 to 12 footer to win the tournament. He's got this putt. I saw a story this morning. His caddy, I can't remember his caddy's name. I wish I would have wrote it down. But his caddy, they get all lined up and everything, and instead of building him up on this huge, huge putt to win the tournament, He walks over and he says, okay, yeah, we're all good there. He pats him on the butt and says, your mom could make this putt. That's what he said to him, instead of, trying to build him up or anything like that. Just he tells, yeah, your mom could make this putt, so you better be able to do it. You know, that's funny. Just an amazing situation Nick Dunlap was in. Hit us up on the First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Let us know what you would choose. Would you choose to turn pro and take $1.5 million? Or are you going to stay amateur and play in the Masters, play in the Open Championship, and be able to continue your college golf career? One other thing that's crazy that you don't really think about this is Christian Behusenhout. I think that's how you pronounce it. It may be wrong.
Better than
but,
me.
So. He got second place in the golf tournament. But guess what happens for him, because the amateur can't take the winning money? Instead of making $700,000 for that tournament, he's now the winner, and he gets $1.5 million, and it kind of moves down the line like that. So he came in second, but he still got the winner's purse at $1.5 million. So good for him. We are going to take a deep, deep dive look into the Broncos' realistic quarterback options going into this coming season. You're listening to The Hall Show, powered by Chevron, on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Broncos. Oh, well, playoffs should be fun. Hear every NFL playoff game on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, this is Terry Fry, author, journalist, screenwriter, and you're listening to Brady Hull on The Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into The Hull Show, powered by Chevron. Brady is out today. I am Mike Danson filling in for Brady. If you like what you hear, you can hear more of me talking about prep sports Saturday mornings on Preps Rewind from 10 to 11. Listen in and get all your information on preps sports in the area. As I mentioned before the break, we're going to jump into a really deep dive, probably take a couple of segments here about realistic options for the Broncos at the quarterback position. I'm going to have Angel on the other side of the glass. He's going to throw me a name, and then we're going to kind of talk about that name, and then we'll move on to another one and just see how this goes. So, Angel, number one on our list here.
Yeah, we're going to start off with the in-house candidates. We'll start here with number three, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, if you look at everything from last year, like let's forget about the locker room stuff for just a second and just talk about what happened on the field, all right? So Pro Football Focus, they go through and they grade every player every week, and then a combined ranking comes out at the end of the season. PFF graded Russell Wilson this season 77.5. That's 18th out of the qualified quarterbacks in the league. In comparison, we'll look. Josh Allen was the number one ranked quarterback this season, and his grade was 91.8. So a pretty big gap there between Josh Allen at number one and Russell Wilson. 77.5 was his grade. But then let's hop down to number 40 ranked quarterback just to get some perspective. Desmond Ridder was the 40th ranked quarterback, and he had a 51.9 grade. So you can see, like, it's kind of legitimate. We know what kind of season Josh Allen had. We know what kind of season Desmond Ridder had. And Russell Wilson kind of hits right in the middle of that. He had 3,070 yards passing, 26 TDs, 8 interceptions. And if you go to the old school quarterback rating, he was a 98 quarterback rating. The thing about Russell Wilson, yeah, he's had a couple of down years, but he's a proven winner in the NFL. You're already paying him so much money. The money thing, I think, is the huge player in this part. And you're going to be paying him no matter what you do. If you look to trade him. So if the one real option that would kind of fit moving on from Russell Wilson without it just destroying your cap is if you were able to find a team that wanted to trade for Russell Wilson after June 1st. Like, how many teams are going to be looking for a potential starting quarterback after June 1st? Unless somebody gets really banged up in the OTAs, the spring stuff, it's very, very, very low chance of that happening. But if you were able to get somebody to trade for Russell Wilson after June 1st, you only hit about $18 million in dead cap, and then the other portion of his pay heads over with the other team, and they have to cover that. You can cut him after June 1st. That's the other option that kind of makes sense. You only hit about, I think it was $34 million this year in dead cap, and then like $23 million next year dead cap. So still huge numbers in dead cap, which really restrict you in building the rest of a team that that's going to win. That June 1st date, I don't know why the NFL has that date set, but it's huge when it comes to trading and cutting players. If you go and you say, we're just done with Russell Wilson at this point, and you cut him prior to June 1st, that's an $85 million dead cap hit this season. I think the cap is going to be like 220-ish, something around there for the season. And if you have $85 million dead cap, that's a huge hit to you right away. And it's not as big of a number if you trade him before June 1st, but I think it kind of hits right around in that $30 million mark of dead cap for Russell Wilson. So that's the one huge thing that you got to think of when you think of moving on from Russell Wilson. Are you willing to take these big dead cap hits just to be rid of him? Or is he your best option? I don't know. Let's go to the next one.
Next one here, also an in-house guy that got some playing time late in the year, Jarrett Stidham.
So Jarrett Stidham, he didn't qualify for the full season PFF grade, but his PFF grade in the two games that he played, if you combine them, two games, divided, do all the average stuff, was 55.5. So as we talked about, Russell Wilson's PFF grade was 77.5. So we're losing a lot by going to Jarrett Stidham. If you take that 55.5, that would have put him as the 39th best quarterback, right in between Bryce Young and Bailey Zappe. So we know, like, Bryce Young, obviously rookie year, he didn't really have a great year. He doesn't really have a lot of weapons. And then Bailey Zappe, there's no weapons for the Patriots. So Jarrett Stidham fitting right in that. Is that a guy you want to roll with? The one thing about Jarrett Stidham is it's like $7 million for this year. So if you do decide to move on from Russell Wilson, he's going to fit into that realm of being able to have a quarterback that can potentially get the job done. And you're not going to be paying a free agent, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, a lot of money to come in. The one thing that stood out to me about Stidham as you look at his two starts is in the NFL, I think if you need to be at 65% completion rating, if not higher in the NFL, if you want to be a legit starting quarterback in this league. And in his two starts, respectively, 62% completion in the first and 58% completion in the second game. To compare that with the other in-house candidate, for the whole season, Russell Wilson was at a 66% completion percentage. Like I said, if you do decide to cut or trade Russell Wilson, that allows you, with Jarrett Stidham, that ability to be flexible with the rest of the roster because you're not going to be paying him very much. So those are two in-house candidates. Who's next on our list, Angel?
We'll start off in the free agent market. Familiar guy with Denver, Drew Lock.
Yeah, and I know Brady was talking about Drew Lock as a potential quarterback option for the Broncos going into this next season as a free agent. I think he's one of those guys that kind of in the same realm. One thing, as we talk about the free agents here, let's assume that's for them to sign a free agent, something has happened with Russell Wilson and he's no longer on this team. So they're going to somehow take this big cap hit. Like, I think that's fair because the only way you're going to bring in some of these names is if Russell Wilson's gone. Nobody's going to come here if Russell Wilson is still here. So Drew Lock is one of those guys. He got a couple of starts this year for Seattle and he looked pretty dang good in the games that he played. Drew Lock fits into that world of, if Russell Wilson's gone, we're going to have enough money. He's been a backup. Nobody really knows. He's probably going to be in that, I would guess he's going to be right in that Jarrett Stidham range, probably $5 to $8 million a year. So Drew Lock, I think, and his familiarity here with Denver, I think is a legitimate option to talk about for Broncos quarterback next season.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the familiarity, a guy that maybe some time away from Denver, from the weird situation with the head coaching turnover and all of that. Maybe it's given him a better mindset, obviously working with Pete Carroll for a couple of years, give you some more confidence, learning from Geno Smith. Maybe come back, get a fresh start for Drew Lock.
It seems like he's matured a little bit in what you saw out of him this year compared to when he was here with Denver.
Absolutely, yeah. Next one on this list here in free agents, Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins, as I mentioned in the opening segment of the show today, once again, Mike Danson in for Brady Hall here on the Hall Show. Kirk Cousins is the Vikings quarterback of the last few years, and I'm a Vikings fan. Tore his Achilles. The one thing about Kirk Cousins coming off of this Achilles, I think if Denver has cut Russell Wilson at this point, like we're assuming, or something has happened, I just, even coming off of the Achilles, Kirk Cousins has proven that he can play in this league at a very, very high level. I just don't think he's going to be in the affordability range for Denver. I think he's going to be commanding in the $30 to $40 million range for a play. And with that much of a dead cap hit, it's probably not realistic to think Kirk Cousins is coming to Denver.
Yeah, and you know, the Broncos as an organization, maybe they feel, is this a Case Keenum situation all over again? Kind of similar, you know, obviously both coming from the Vikings at that point. How is he coming off of the Achilles? What is he without Justin Jefferson and that kind of offense in Minnesota? It would definitely, you'd have to pay a lot to try to get him over there, and there's going to be other teams that would put in bids after him as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if he doesn't go to back to Minnesota, I think Atlanta is a chance, is a possibility for him.
All right, moving down this list here, Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill. I actually really liked Ryan Tannehill coming out when he was with your Dolphins. Angel, I liked Ryan Tannehill, and then he kind of fell off, but then he got his career back in order in Tennessee, and he's probably going to be affordable. He would fit into that. I've actually seen multiple things where it says Ryan Tannehill would be a good fit for the Broncos as a bridge guy at this point, but I think he's done for. From what I saw this last year in Tennessee when he would play, I don't think he has it anymore. He's not as mobile as he once was. He's having to try to play from the pocket a little bit more, and that's not his game, really. He's a guy who needs to get out of the pocket, and he just can't do it anymore. He's affordable, but if I was Denver, I'm out.
I agree. I don't think he has it as much. He had that one good year, his first year with Tennessee, and everyone kind of thought, oh, here he is. He's reemerging. But obviously the quarterback situation there in Tennessee has been in flux, and now they're off looking for a new head coach at this point. So, or I guess they've already got their head coach.
Yep, they got him.
Moving down this list, Jacoby Brissett.
So Jacoby Brissett is an interesting guy to me. He started with the Patriots. He went to the Colts. He filled in while Andrew Luck was injured and played pretty dang good. Honestly, he went to the Browns and then spent last year with the Commanders. He came in and played a little bit at the end of a couple games this last year, and he was good. He was decent. I don't think good is the right word. Probably decent is the correct word. But he's getting up there in age, and I just don't know. Like, once again, he's going to fit into the price range that the Broncos are going to need, but I think there's better options than Jacoby Brissett for the Broncos at this point.
Another one here, Tyrod Taylor.
Now, Tyrod Taylor, I don't know if I can name all the teams. He started with the Jets. He played for the Bills. He played for the Chargers. I think he spent a year with the Browns, and then he's ended up now with the Giants this year. And I honestly think that he got a raw deal a couple of times with Buffalo. He was doing really good. And then he goes to potentially be the starter for the Chargers. And he's getting some sort of shot to help his back. He had like a back injury or something like that. And the Chargers doctor puts the needle in too far and ends up puncturing his lung and gets a collapsed lung and all this stuff. Like, I like Tyrod Taylor as a player, and I thought he stepped in pretty admirably with a horrible offensive line with the Giants this year. But I don't think Tyrod Taylor, he's going to fit into that affordable range. If you're telling me I have to choose Jacoby Brissett or Tyrod Taylor, I'm going to take Tyrod Taylor. But I still think there's better options than Tyrod Taylor.
I agree. Him and Jacoby feel very much like veteran, bridge, cheap alternative for your quarterback.
Yep.
Next one here, Marcus Mariota.
And, man, I'm just, the only thing I'm going to say about Marcus Mariota at this point is I don't think he has it. I don't think he ever did have it. I don't think he ever will have it. I'm out on him. I don't know how you feel, but I would be completely out on Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I see him more as kind of just a permanent backup at this point. Good leadership guy to have in the locker room, good film study guy, but he's not one I would trust to try to win you games.
Well, and the thing that I'm out really on Marcus Mariota is I watched the quarterback documentary on Netflix, and the fact that when he got benched, he just kind of bailed, and it was a weird situation where he just disappears from the team. So I just, like, maybe he is good in the locker room, but that kind of bothered me.
Yep, keep moving down this list here. Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold, I really, Sam Darnold to me is, and there's another one coming up, a couple more coming up, but he's kind of a gunslinger guy, honestly, I think he can play. I think he's the kind of guy that is going to be affordable and has potential to win some games if he's a bridge quarterback. I don't think he's the guy you want to go, hey, we're going with you for the next 5 years, man. But if you want to bring him in and have him in the quarterback room and maybe mentoring a rookie, I think that wouldn't be a horrible idea.
Yeah, I think you're a little wary of former Jets quarterbacks at this point just because how much damage did that team do to him mentally? You know, he's out there seeing ghosts on the field sometimes, so you wonder where his mentality is at. Not a bad option there. Next one here is Jameis Winston.
Now, Jameis Winston is the one that's really interesting to me because when Jameis left Tampa Bay, he went to New Orleans and he spent 2 years with Sean Payton. So very interesting to me. You want to talk about a guy who's going to win you games, but he's going to lose you games also? That's Jameis. It's an interesting one to me. I think he fits into the price range, and maybe Sean Payton wants a reunion with him.
Yeah, I could definitely see that guy that's got talent, still has that turnover issue from time to time, but a guy that Sean Payton obviously trusted for a couple of years down in there in New Orleans. Next one here is Baker Mayfield.
And I think Baker Mayfield's going back to Tampa.
I agree.
I think, and even if he's not going right back to Tampa, there's going to be a bidding war because, man, he played a great season. I've been a Baker Mayfield fan. I think he's kind of got a raw deal, like, at the end of Cleveland and then in Carolina. I think he's a better player than the way they treated him, and I think he proved it this year. But he's either going to be with Tampa or he's going to be way too expensive for the Broncos.
I agree with that. Another one here, Gardner Minshew.
I love Gardner Minshew. I love the way he plays. I love... he's athletic. He can sling it. One of my favorite young receivers in the league, Michael Pittman Jr., is on that Colts team, and Minshew found him a ton. I wonder if he's going to fit into that price range for the Broncos, though, because I feel like Minshew's the kind of guy that there could be a little bit of a bidding war, and it gets to be up around $15 to $20 million a year for him, because I think he can start in the league. I don't know that the Broncos are going to have the cap space to pay $15 to $20 million.
Yeah, I think him and Baker are very similar, two guys that maybe a lot of the league has kind of just turned away from, thinking, oh, he'll just be a backup, but two guys that have really shown out this year in situations where maybe they weren't going to be the starter at the start of the year, both got their teams, you know, into the playoffs, if not right at the cusp of it. A couple more here. Josh Dobbs.
Josh Dobbs. This is a tough one for me. Like, he got traded to the Vikings after the Kirk Cousins injury, and he came in and he played two games, just absolutely lights out, amazing. And then the next three games, he didn't even look like an NFL quarterback. He didn't even look like he had any business being out on the field playing in an NFL game. I think he's super smart. I think he's a great, great, great locker room guy. But to be completely honest, I don't even know if he's a backup quarterback. Like, he scared me off so much in those last 2.5 games he played with the Vikings that I legitimately don't know that he is an NFL quarterback.
I would agree with that. A couple more here. Easton Stick.
Easton Stick is the Chargers backup. He came in with Justin Herbert going down with the finger injury. I look at Easton Stick and I go, this guy kind of reminds me of like just a career backup. Like, I don't know that you want him coming in and being your starter for 17 games on the season. I think this is a guy that if he has to come in and play 1, 2, 3 games, maybe you're going to be all right. But to ask him for any more than that, I don't think it's going to work.
Mason Rudolph.
Mason Rudolph is interesting to me. He played decent for the Steelers, kind of a roller coaster a little bit. I wrote down here, he kind of reminds me of like a poor man Geno Smith, like a little bit athletic, kind of can sling it, but not fantastic. That's where I'm at with Mason Rudolph. Going to fit into the price range, but I think out of this list that we've went through, there's definitely better options than Mason Rudolph.
And last one here on the free agent list, Jake Browning.
Jake Browning stepped in, I think, admirably for Joe Burrow with the Cincinnati Bengals. I think he played really well. He's way more athletic than you actually think he is. He stands out there and he looks like he's just going to be this straight drop back, kind of be in the pocket guy, but he's pretty athletic. He's able to run. The one thing I worry about is it helps a lot when you have that receiving core and that running back that the Cincinnati Bengals have, and the Broncos don't have that right now. There's no Ja'Marr Chase on that Broncos offense. It's just not there. There's not even a Joe Mixon, I don't think. Jake Browning's interesting to me, would kind of fit in that range. Man, maybe it fits well. You have a Jake Browning, Jarrett Stidham kind of quarterback competition in the fall. Jake Browning is interesting to me. Yeah. We're going to take a break here. We will finish our Bronco quarterback talk on the other side when we look at rookies that may be able to be drafted and some trades potentially. You're listening to The Hall Show, powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
What's up, hooligans? This is Zach Stevens with DNVR Broncos, and you're listening to The Hall Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into The Hall Show, powered by Chevron. I'm Mike Danson in for Brady today. Brady will be back tomorrow. We're going to continue our Bronco quarterback talk here with potential options for them to have quarterback. One thing, we're going to jump into rookies next. The one thing I want to, let's assume that the Broncos are not going to move anywhere. They don't really have a lot of draft capital to move up and down. Well, they could move down, I guess, but they don't have a lot of draft capital to move up. So I've taken Drake May and Caleb Williams completely off the board at this point. So go ahead, Angel.
First one here, Jaden Daniels.
So for me as a Vikings fan, if Jaden Daniels is going to be there for the Broncos at 12 and the Vikings didn't take him at 11, I'm probably going to lose my mind. But Jaden Daniels, Heisman Trophy winner, he's 23 years old. He threw for 3,800 yards, 72% completion percentage. That's huge. 40 TDs, only four picks. He also ran for over 1,000 yards. His strengths are he's very athletic. He's a good decision maker, and he's very good at throwing the ball on the run. He has great leadership ability also. Weakness is kind of maneuvering in the pocket to throw the ball. He maneuvers in the pocket to get out of there. As soon as it starts to get crushed, he wants out. He doesn't want anything to do with being in there at that point. And he doesn't really use his lower body when he's standing in the pocket to fire it. And that's where a lot of that stuff is going to be necessary as he moves on to the next level. So Jaden Daniels may be an option at 12.
All right. I know this is Brady's guy here, Michael Penix Jr.
So Michael Penix Jr., 23 years old also, almost threw for 5,000 yards, 36 TDs, 11 picks. He's left-handed, which it sounds crazy to talk about, but you spend all this money on a left tackle to protect the quarterback's blind side. Now you get a left-handed quarterback, and your right tackle better be pretty dang good also. Strengths is he's a pocket passer with enough mobility in the pocket. He was asked at Washington to make a lot of pre-snap adjustments, which I think is huge because that's you got to be able to see the defense before. He's got a very strong arm, and we saw that in both the semifinal game and the championship game. He could flat out sling it. Weaknesses, injury history, multiple ACL tears and shoulder injuries. He gets flustered when the pressure comes in his face. If it comes from the outside, he's able to step up in the pocket. But if it comes up in his face, he really struggles at that point. So I don't I personally don't think Michael Penix is going to be a successful NFL quarterback. There's a lot of people who do, but I don't. I'm not sure. I may be eating my words here in a few years.
Another one here, Bo Nix.
Bo Nix, the Oregon quarterback, he threw for 4,500 yards, 77% completion percentage, 45 TDs, only three interceptions. If you're going to take Bo Nix, though, if you're the Broncos, the number 12 spot is not a spot you got to take him. You need to back yourself down in that first round, maybe get into the 20s or so, pick up maybe a second round pick, which they don't have. Strengths of Bo Nix, he's very good when the play breaks down. He's very good at off-schedule stuff. He has a quick release and a strong arm. His weaknesses are pocket footwork. He wants to get out of there also. He doesn't really move around in the pocket well. And he lived in a world where they line up the court. He looks over to the sideline. They kind of give him signals, and then he goes. So he's not completely making the decisions, reading the defenses by himself. That worries me a little bit with Bo Nix.
Okay, last potential rookie here, J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy from Michigan threw for under 3,000 yards this season, 72% completion, 22 TD, four interceptions. Once again, this is kind of the same thing with Bo Nix. You can't take J.J. McCarthy at the 12 spot. You have to, if that's who you really want, you got to be able to trade back. And then if you think that he's getting close where he's going to go, then you got to trade up again. But you can't take him at 12. It's just not, he's not that value. He's not going to get that value. You may even trade to the beginning of the second and still be able to steal McCarthy. Strengths, he's got great pocket presence. And one thing that was huge is that running game with Michigan was amazing, and he thrived in play action passes, which are huge. Weaknesses, not very much on pre-snap adjustments, kind of with Bo Nix, but he's getting up there and he's just running the play that's called. He's not going to audible or anything like that. And I don't know, he seems like everything is on a line. He's got to learn some touch. Not every pass needs to be 100 miles an hour. He's got a great arm and he shows it off, but not every pass needs to be that way. So that's J.J. McCarthy.
All right, we'll look at four real quick here for potential trade options. We'll start off with Justin Fields.
Yeah, Justin Fields, I'm one that thinks the Bears are going to take either Caleb Williams or Drake May at that number one spot. They're talking to Cliff Kingsbury about being the offensive coordinator, and he worked with Caleb Williams at USC this last year, so maybe a potential combo there. But Justin Fields is going to be available. The problem is I don't know if he fits into the realm of what the Broncos are looking for, because you're going to have to pay, like, his contract. He's done with his rookie. He's got one more year on a rookie contract, and then you got to pay him again. So they're going to run into some money situations with that. I think Justin Fields is a decent quarterback. I think he's on a slow incline of being a better quarterback. But if you can maybe get him for a second or third round pick, do you take a flyer?
Yeah. Another one here, Jimmy Garoppolo.
And a lot of people are having Jimmy Garoppolo in the free agent category, but he's under contract with the Raiders. I think I'm out on Jimmy G at this point. I think we kind of saw what he is now at the beginning of the season with the Raiders, and that's his buddy Josh McDaniels, and he couldn't get it done. I'm out.
Okay. Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray is a very interesting one. I don't think the money would all work out for the Broncos to get Kyler Murray. And I really think the Cardinals are in on him. I think he played really well at the end of the season, and they're going to stick with him.
All right, last one here, Mac Jones.
Mac Jones is an interesting one to me just because he showed some capabilities in his rookie year that were pretty solid. I thought he was really going to do something, but New England didn't have any weapons to help him out, and that makes it really hard on a quarterback. If you're out there, the First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043, send us in a text and let us know who you're leaning towards for the Broncos quarterback. We'll get out here on the other side. We will talk a little bit more NFL.
Stay up to to Speed with the Rams with the Isaiah Stevens Show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, I'm Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into The Whole Show, powered by Chevron. I'm Mike Danson, filling in for Brady today. Just going to be a quick segment here. One thing I want to mention, we talked about the Titans getting their head coach hired. Brian Callahan hired by the Titans. He's been the Bengals offensive coordinator the last few years. He has a Denver Bronco connection. He started with the Broncos in 2010. He was kind of a quality control coach, and then he was an offensive assistant. He was with the Broncos through 2015 when Peyton Manning led the Broncos to that Super Bowl, and then he was out. He's worked with the likes of Manning, Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr, Joe Burrow, and now he's going to get his hands on Will Levis. I think this is probably a good hire by the Titans to bring somebody in who's worked with a lot of big-time quarterbacks. And I thought Will Levis, he definitely dropped in the draft compared to what everybody was thinking. But in the time that he got to play, I was pretty impressed by him. I thought that he showed some mobility. He showed some awareness, and he was able to stay in the pocket when he should, and he got out when he shouldn't. They just need to get him some weapons. And I think if Brian Callahan for the Titans can bring in this offense that he's been running with Joe Burrow, I think you could have a good fit there with Brian Callahan and the Titans. There's still five positions available in the NFL: the Panthers, the Chargers, the Falcons, the Commanders, and the Seahawks. We're going to get out, and on the other side, we will come back with buy or sell. You're listening to The Hall Show.